All right. Okay. Whoa. No, man, I'm seriously asking. What is this show, man? Two guys making a podcast. Got a lot to say, so we talk fast. If it's Thursday night, say Atlas. Two hosts, not miscast. Mike and Johnny, bring the bomb blast. On your Facebook feed, never bypass. Saying bad stuff, leave you flabbergast. Our spots, not super fast. Still, much better than a newscast. Miss the live show, rebroadcast. The Tangent Podcast. Never outclassed, man. Tangent Podcast with Mike and Johnny. Bring in the schmears. Rock for rookies, represent. Let's get this show started, man.
It's Tangent. It's Tangent. It's Tangent Podcast. It's Tangent. It's Tangent Podcast. It's Tangent. It's Tangent. It's Tangent Podcast.
Welcome to episode 15 of Tangent Podcast with Mike and Johnny. Alongside Mike, I'm Johnny.
Hey, man, episode 15!
Thank you so much! Alright, we weren't here last week, but we're back this week, and I don't know, shit.
I gotta ask you a question. This is very important, okay? New episode, whatever, I gotta say. You remember that Pepsi Chill Out card?
Oh my god! I didn't have one, Michael! Why do you have to bring that up all the time?
Well, I've actually gotten in touch with Pepsi, and we have a surprise for you! It's not a Pepsi Chill Out card.
All right, for those of you just joining us here tonight, we have...
On Mixlr.
We have had a whole kinds of craziness going on right here. For those of you who are joining us, who have been with us on the Facebook Live feed, thank you so much for being with us. Basically, what happened was Michael forgot to start the audio-only version of the show, and I'll accept some of the blame for it because I started to push things that I knew not about. And that's my it was a license to chill.
License to chill. Pepsi Chill Out card. I Googled it. I had to.
Everything got messed up, but now that we're here back again, we're gonna have a little bit of a more serious conversation. And I can already feel my voice starting to give out, and I've got a lot of...
Because we didn't have the music break?
That, or I was already... It doesn't matter, because we're here now. We're going to talk about some Pesach stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did a lot of preparations, and I found a conspiracy in the Bible.
Yes. Yes. The only one.
Well, this is the one that I
found. So you didn't really dig very deep. You only found one conspiracy this week?
I was digging deep because... Well, I wasn't specifically looking for it, right? I was digging deep because I was looking for stuff about Passover. The idea was... Or, and it still is, actually.
Sure.
The idea was... To try to... I'm going to get in close because my throat is really hurting me.
Do you want me to leave?
Everybody listen up here. Michael's going to take a break. We're going to get in close. The idea was... Something that was interesting to me was the idea that, like, we know all about what the point of the Seder is. We know about the Me'avdut L'Cherut. We know about all the freedom and all the traditions. We know about all of that. But my question was... Why is it structured that way? What is the actual ceremony? What are the origins of the ceremony? Why is the Seder take the shape that it takes today? So I tried to figure out what the link was between the past and the present and going into the future about...
Well, I mean, without even knowing what you're going to say, I'm assuming since we Jews put everything around the table...
Do the sharing on the things we like to share on.
Okay.
Keep talking.
I can't do both.
Okay,
at the
fine.
Same
so,
time.
So make your point.
Okay. We put everything around the table. Hey, you gonna fast? You should sit around a table first. We're out in a desert for a couple of years, and our shit that we lived in wasn't so good. Let's do it around a table, and we'll build the hut around a table. What is in a sukkah? Fucking table. Okay. Hey. We just got a Torah. What do you want to do? Hey, let's have six meals around the table. That pretty much sums up all
and,
the...
And we'll sit around the table, and we'll talk about
and
it,
we'll
and
sit
we'll
around the
it.
Table, and we'll sit around the table, and that's how they're like, hey, flatbread, table time.
That's an interesting idea, and it's sort of like the beginning of the conversation, and as we move on, you'll see that you're more right than you realize even about that. But... what I was trying to figure out is where we have situations of the Jews, not just the Jews inventing, right? Because we have two real places in the Bible where Pesach is discussed. The first time is when it happens, obviously, the 10 plagues, Exodus from the Exodus from Jerusalem, the Exodus from Egypt, and all that sort of stuff. The second time we have it is at the end in Deuteronomy, where the laws are actually discussed. And by the way, much of what we know about the Pesach Seder, it all comes from actually the Deuteronomic parts of it. Not necessarily from, we talk about the story, but the laws of it. It's the Seder itself is based on the...
on laws from on the stuff the from book Deuteronomy. Of the Dude.
Yeah,
from the Book of the Dude.
From the Book of the Dude. So that's interesting. So what I was trying to figure out is places where we talk about Pesach that are after the Bible and stuff like that, but I wanted to find the earliest places. And that led me to King Yoshiyahu in the book of Melachim Bet, okay?
Wait a minute. All the halachas come from Deuteronomy for Pesach, but Pesach came later?
It's sort of like...
What did you find? What did you
find? I'll tell you what I found. And I don't remember even exactly how I came to it. It was in one of the articles that I read. Basically, what happens is, in the book of Kings, right... it gets basically from bad to worse. We are at the peak of our powers with King Solomon. As soon as he passes on the kingdom, it splits in half. There's idol worship. We go up, we go down, we go up, we go down. And it's 300 years of just this cycle of sort of violence and retribution and stuff like that. By the time we get to King Josiah or Yoshiyahu, he follows his father Amon and his grandfather Menashe, who were notorious idol worshippers, and really the Bible speaks of them extremely unflatteringly and talks about how evil they are and stuff like that. And what's interesting is if you look at those two kings in the context of when they were, look at them in the context of when they were actually kings, it was also at the height, like the late end of the height of the Assyrian Empire. So if they wanted to be close to the Assyrian Empire to say, hey guys, don't mess up our shit, they would have to sort of be idol worshippers in order to...
You're talking about the Jews.
I'm talking about Menashe and his son Amon. All would right. have to have sort of been... would sort of have to been a good subservient to the Assyrian Empire. So they would have been idol worshippers just to keep their political interests alive.
Menashe and their son?
Menashe is a king of Israel. His son Amon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know because of the people of Amon, but his son's name is Amon.
Okay.
Okay.
And Menashe is also the name of a whole fucking tribe.
Right. And also one person who was the son of Moses, of Yosef.
Okay.
So the son Yoshiyahu, right? He's this amazing king. He takes the kingdom when he's 8. And then fast forwards, the Torah fast forwards 18 years later.
Where after he's murdered tons of people out of Game of Thrones style.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But doesn't talk about that. And basically what he does is he wakes up one day and he goes, hey, you know what? He goes to his scribe. He says, hey man, take a bunch of silver.
Let's Judea renovate, and Samaria great again.
Let's bring back Judaism. He tells his scribe, go to the Holy Temple, we're going to rededicate it, we're going to redecorate it, take all this silver, and go make it fancy again. The scribe gets there, meets the high priest Hilkiyahu.
Now, Israel was split at this time? Yes. There was like two, but, it was but, Judea but Josiah, and but
Josiah has Josiah marries a woman from the north, and has designs on reunification as well.
Okay.
So, they get to Jerusalem. They give him the silver, and then Hilkiyahu goes, hey, look what I got here. And he whips out a scroll.
Oh.
What? Oh. He doesn't look like whip his dick out or anything.
No, I thought he was like, is this Pepsi or Coke?
Right. So Hilkiyahu whips out a scroll, and he says, hey, I found a scroll, everybody. Look what I found.
What was on the scroll?
Well, I'll tell you about the scroll in a second. So they read the scroll. They bring it back to Josiah. They read the scroll to Josiah. It doesn't explicitly say what's in the scroll, but this is what it talks about. They bring the scroll to Josiah. He reads it, and he's like, oh, crap. Like, we are way worse off than I am, than I even realized how bad off we are as a people. Like,
As a Jewish people.
Yeah, I thought that we were just going to maybe try to change things up a little bit and bring people back, but whoa. After reading this book, and the way he interacts with it, and the fact that the Pasuk calls it Sefer HaTorah, right? The Sefer Torah, means that the sages talk about how this is one of the scrolls that Moses actually had written himself.
Oh, shit.
And a lot of people talk about it as the Book of Deuteronomy. So a lot of the traditions that we have of Passover coming from being based out of the Deuteronomic, I'm sorry, the Deuteronomical...
I just like that you keep saying dude.
text of it, right? Comes from that scroll that they found. You with me?
This is the Book of Deuteronomy?
This is in the Book of Kings that they're talking about it.
But that's what the sages,
that's what the Talmud seems to want to say.
Okay, and the five books.
So wait, it gets better.
Wait, I'm not even there yet. The five books, right? The five books, Bereishit until the Book of the Dude, right?
Right.
Were written down by who?
By Moses, through the Word of God.
No, but they wrote everything down, right? That's he wrote everything down, and we've been reprinting it.
That is what we believe, yes.
For thing through thing, right? Generation through generation.
Right. Now, okay. You could get into Bible scholarship and biblical criticism and all that kind of stuff, but that's not the conversation for tonight.
No, I just wanted to make sure, because my question then was, while King was king, while King Hoshea was king...
Yoshiyahu.
Yoshabadu was king. No one had any access to the other four books?
If you're living through a time where there's rampant idol worship, the books might have been forgotten about. The books might have been put away. Remember a few weeks ago when we talked about Rabbi Kellerman and his thoughts about the one guy who brings it back? This is where I started to think, wow, Yoshio is like this Fred guy. He's the guy who brings it back. He could have just written a scroll in a back.
Johnny's talking about what we were trying to figure out about Mass Revelation. Who was the guy who...
If Mass Revelation was a lie, at some point somebody would have had to lie to us in our history, and that person would be remembered as the guy who brought us the tradition, right? So we're remembering Yoshiyahu and Chilkiyahu, the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, for this very reason. So my brain starts going, hey, wait a minute.
But here's what are you worried about? Spell it out. What are you worried?
I'm worried that Hilkiahu the high priest took some money from the king to write a scroll so that they could exert their power over the people again. But I'm not even there yet.
Okay.
I'm just telling you the story, okay? What happens next is Hilkiahu rends his clothing. He tears his clothing. He's so depressed. He sends his guys to go talk to the
prophet. It wasn't my best work. I mean...
He says, yo, you guys have to go talk to the prophetess. Hulda, one of the female prophetesses.
Which is not a bad name for a metal band.
And when they go to her, it sounds like a Jewish version of going to visit the oracle at Adelphi. Like, she tells them a bunch of, you're all doomed. She tells them a terrible thing. She goes, you're all doomed. Yoshiyahu, man... You're cool, like, God understands what you're trying to do, and you're cool, so you're not going to live to see the tragedy? Oh, but it's coming. Okay? Which is crazy, because then Yoshiyahu ends up dying, like, a few years later, horribly, in a war. Spoiler alert. So, they come back.
You're making me really want to read this whole Bible.
You should read the two prakim, what's a parak?
Chapters.
The two chapters I'm talking about the story of Yoshiyahu. Okay. So then...
I can't believe how excited you are about all this shit.
She tells them all this stuff. And about how we're all doomed, but still try anyway. So Yoshiyahu brings the scroll back. He reads it to the people. Then there's like 12 psukim about him destroying every single idol and fake thing. And here's where it gets into the conspiracy theory for me. Because then he goes... And now we're all going to keep Passover, and everybody's got to come to Jerusalem and bring your sacrifices and your money. We're gonna bring Pesach back, and guess what? You're not allowed to have your idols anymore, And you know why? Because you gotta come to my temple and bring all your sacrifices, and we're gonna worship it all there.
Wait a minute, how long
had High fives in secret, and then...
Wait a minute, how long had the temple been around for?
At this point, the temple had been around for about 300 years.
And you're saying that everyone at this point is just going, well... Yeah, I mean, they would either go, that makes sense. We heard people used to bring sacrifices to the temple. So it's not like it's that far out of the realm of possibility.
Okay, that's fine. I want you to explain it away, because I was very troubled by the...
It's just because it's the whole mass revelation thing, though. You're saying that mass revelation is solid. It's Pesach that's kind of...
No, not even that. It was just an interesting thing to look at with a modern perspective and say, hey, wait a minute, this sounds like a conspiracy theory. Guy decides to bring the people back from their wayward path. He gives his scribe, by the way, his scribe money, and people will say, well, it might have been a scribe, might have been his secretary, whatever. Says Sofer, fine, but it could also mean Sofer isn't counting, fine. Then they go to Jerusalem, and the high priest finds a scroll, and it all culminates in him telling everybody to bring their sacrifices to the temple, which will bring a huge influx of cash to the temple.
Now here's my question. Why did the oracle at Chelma...
Why did Huldah the prophetess...
Why did Huldah the prophetess say that everything was going to end horribly if this dude's bringing back... If he's bringing it back?
I don't know. He's like,
I'm bringing back the Judaism. Hey, how's my Judaism going? Everyone's gonna fucking die. Wouldn't you think you go, oh, back to idols?
I think the idea is
end horribly.
I think
us.
The idea is probably to get people to try to get people to try. Right? That's the idea of what's it called? Jonah. You know the story of Jonah?
I'm aware.
Jonah is tasked with trying to bring people back to their religion. And he freaks out and he's like, they're not going to listen to me. And the point was, you had to let them try.
Right.
And I think she's trying to, but the way she says it is pretty darn negative. And it's pretty crazy. So through all that, I'm like, oh my God, I've uncovered a secret in the Torah that I've never seen before.
And did you Google that conspiracy?
I looked about it, and your answer is good for it. If you think about it also, if it's just his grandfather, it hasn't been that long.
Right, because then you and I have spoken about this, and I know that we all sort of have this.
And the temple exists still.
Right, the temple there, right?
Right.
And I guess the real issue is, we sometimes look back and go, didn't people used to die in their old age of 30 back in the old days from all these crazy different diseases? But I feel like that was later that people were dying so young. Like in the Dark Ages, people were living to the grand old age of 40.
Right.
Probably, as
the joke goes, to living to the grand old age of died during childbirth.
Right. So, but I'm sure back then in the desert, there couldn't have been that many disgusting diseases. There was no black plague back then.
No, there wasn't a black plague back then.
I'm sure
but...
there were a lot of old dudes with white beards.
So it was fascinating to me to think that to find this whole thing in the are we going? Are we even live?
Yeah, we're live. We're all good. Right. It's solid. Everything's good.
Okay. So the it was just interesting to me that was the case.
Okay, so...
But we're going on from there. Don't worry.
So in the end, so why do we Pesach Seder? You never answer that
we're
question.
We're getting to that.
Okay, because that's kind of...
This year,
I want to point out that this year, my family is doing something very, very different. I've been married for 10 years now, and in all those 10 years, we've either gone to Jerusalem for Pesach Seder to be with my parents... Or when we stayed here, we brought my parents here for a year. Or we've had Pesach Seder with this guy right here and his family and with
his
friends. We've done all that stuff. And for the first time ever, my wife was just like, I don't like people anymore. Let's do a Pesach Seder completely and utterly by ourselves. And the whole concept of it is, and she's saying, this year we're going to be focused completely on the kids. Because when we have our friends over, you know, it kind of, we love being with them, and it sort of takes away from what the focus is supposed to be on the kids. Now, my eldest daughter's running around right now going, hey, the focus is going to be on us. This is all about the children. So that's kind of, I don't know how well it's going to last. But Elle already has games planned. She has games for the kids.
I would never accuse your wife of deciding she doesn't like anybody. I think she's decided she doesn't like anybody Pesach night.
It's possible. It's very possible.
Because we're going to have the exact opposite of that. We're going to my brother-in-law. They're going to do their family traditions, and it's going to go till 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm going to do my best to be a good boy and play along. But the good news is my sister, God bless you, Ricky. Shout out to Ricky. She'll be there, so we can sort of go off to the side and goof off. I already know that at least one of my sisters-in-law wants in on that, too. Because she's... But here's the thing that nobody realizes, okay? We're up to a maximum... I think we're up to, like, 11 adults.
You have two sisters-in-laws, and only one's going to be there.
Both of them are going to be there. So I have three sisters-in-law, by the way. Two of the three are going to be there. Shout out to Ellie, who's listening into Chicago.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fine. When I thought sister-in-law, I thought...
I've got sister, Max... Okay.
Sister of brother.
So they're going to go... Here's what I don't think that they realize. Because there's going to be 11 adults... There's going to be two, three, four, five children at least. Six children, possibly. Three of the children are
babies.
Maybe four of the children are little babies, right? As soon as the babies get fussy, all bets are off. Like, all Pesach Seder bets are off. As soon as somebody with any kind of, like, desire to do the Shmias stuff has to leave the table for a prolonged period of time, then we're done.
No, here's where you're wrong, okay? If the wives are the ones who are then given the task of taking care of the babies, your brothers-in-laws are just gonna, they're just gonna go.
Well, there's a rule already
in place.
They're gonna
go, plus you're messed up now with your whole I love religion.
And well, I have a Dvar Torah, it's this. I'm gonna give this Dvar Torah at the Pesach Seder.
Don't listen.
Spoiler alert! For those of you gonna be at our Pesach Seder, I don't think anybody who is listening right now. So, where were we? We're trying to figure out how the Pesach Seder got to be the Pesach Seder. Okay. So, what we have is this story of Yoshiyahu bringing Passover back.
Okay.
Okay? Now, a few years later, the Hashmonean dynasty takes over. They make some changes. They start to edit things. They make it so that you can bring the Korban Pesach at home so you can have a meal with your family. That's one of the rules that they change. You don't actually have to come for that specific offering. You can do it with your family. You don't have to go to the temple for that.
That's pretty sweet.
Already a step in the direction. And then a few years
one
after that...
One of the first steps in direction.
A few years after that, the temple's destroyed. So that happens. And then we go into exile, and then Ezra and Nehemiah bring us back, and eventually what happens is the once the second temple is destroyed, the Seder starts to take the shape of the way we know it now. Now, how does it get to be that shape? If you look at rituals from other religions, you see a lot of parallels between the form and the structure of the Pesach Seder and something from Hellenistic society, which is called the Symposium. Okay? It was a type of dinner party that was done amongst the Greeks. And then
everybody's leaning to the left.
There's leaning. There's vegetables eaten at certain times.
Lots of cups
there's
of
certain
wine.
Tons of wine. There's certain forms of conversation that take place throughout the evening. And it's sort of an elitist kind of only the privileged get to participate. And what the sages do is they say, hey, you know what? That's not a bad idea, but they take it and they flip it completely and
get rid of the naked dancing girls.
And make it about for every man. And not only for every man, but like we have a prayer at the outset of the Seder, which is, hey, if anybody needs a place to come, come on and join us and come to us. There's plenty of food. I mean, of course, there's plenty of food. We're Jews, right?
I read a very interesting article today that had nothing to do with you and nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I found a way to...
But it's Tangent Podcast, it's and tangent. That's what we do.
Okay, so my father sent me an article called Why Civilizations Die.
Okay.
Okay? And I was a little bit confused why he was sending me this... Because he sent it to the family group, and it was a little historical, and I'm like, what the hell? The family doesn't care about this kind of stuff, right? And it started by focusing on the Mayans, how, like, the questioning where the hell the Mayan civilization disappeared to. Because there were, like, 15 million of them, right? Okay. What the hell happened to all of them? And they were so advanced for their time, and then within, like, a couple of years, vanished off the face of the planet. Okay? And then he mentioned another group of people, and another group, and each time they're like, what happened with these communities? And what apparently the historians say is that their civilizations fell apart because they got to a point in their civilization where they started having all of these problems, like political problems and environmental problems, and they sort of reached the boundaries of their belief system of what could be handled. And so what they did was, instead of finding solutions to their problems, they kept pushing them off, and eventually, it's especially with the Mayans, they started just doing human sacrifice.
Right.
Eddie Izzard.
Right.
Et voila, right? And now we're back to human sacrifice. So, except that could only last so long, because when you keep killing people for the gods, but none of your problems get fixed,
right?
I'm sure that wasn't going to end well.
But they weren't evolved enough, they didn't have... like science or
they were much more advanced than everybody else on the planet.
At the time, but that was
but everybody else survived and they disappeared. This is an amazing civilization.
So does your dad say we're doomed to repeat it?
So the point of the article, my dad did not write the article. The point of the article was that the Jews, who were this great society, this great civilization, when we were we're in small Israel, but we got our kings and we got our temples and we got everything going on. We too were down with sacrifice for a while. But at some point or another, we got to a point where, like, the sacrifice isn't working for us. What's the next logical step? And our, basically what they're saying is, how have we managed to survive all this time? Because we have these sages and we have these rabbis who, whenever there's a problem, they don't just get stuck with it and go, well, it's a problem now. But they take everything that we have and go, okay, where do we go from here? We've reached this problem. Sacrifice is not working anymore. We need to be with our families. You know what? Now we're just going to do symbolic sacrifice from this now. Now we're going to get rid of the... we don't have the temple anymore. Oh my God, should we just implode? No, now we're going to create prayer.
So what
now
he's
we're gonna...
saying is that the reason why we've
survived...
by
the way, I'm super summarizing an article that I also didn't finish.
What he's saying is, in a way, it sounds like, is that the reason why we survive is because the temple was destroyed. Because if the temple had never been destroyed, we might have evolved to that point because we keep doing sacrifice. But the decision was made for us. The idea was taken away from us. The world said...
well, as God tells us again and again and again and again, here's where I want you to be. You can't handle that shit, and I'm going to take it away from you.
Reason we survive is only because God keeps punishing us from time to time.
Think about it like this. Today, I was talking, and we're going to get to the, hopefully, it's a little small jump to Kitneo, but we're not there yet, okay?
Did you read some Kitneo stuff?
I did a little bit, but not today. I discussed it with my chavruta.
Okay.
Okay? So I was talking with another rabbi, and I was like, this whole Kitneo thing, and it's blowing my mind. What do you think is more likely to happen? That I will be able to walk amongst my peers with marijuana, let's say, right? With marijuana, and I'll be able to openly smoke with them? Or will I be able to eat a bowl of rice in front of my peers?
Oh, pie.
And this rabbi says to me, he goes, definitely marijuana. You'll be able to have marijuana first. He goes, marijuana in 10 years, you'll be able to eat Kitneo in 50 years. And I was like, and he goes, but it's not going to matter, because even if you get the marijuana in 10 years, the marijuana is going to be Kitneo.
Yeah.
And I go, why would marijuana be Kitneo? And he goes, because we can't have nice things.
Yeah, yeah.
That was
by the way, marijuana is already Kitneo. That's already Kitneo. The rabbis said, fuck you, and it's Kitneo.
Okay. I just wanted to throw that out there, but
not that that's
it's a cool article, though.
Send it to me.
It's
like
a cool article.
So what that led me, from the historical perspective, what it led me to was the idea of what the sages do is they take the form of this Hellenistic symposium, but they change the content. And then I start I started thinking about form and about content. And I'm going to mess this up because I was confused myself. I was pacing around my apartment. My wife was like, what the hell is wrong with you? And I'm like, it's form and content. And she's like, you're an idiot.
It's form and content. I gotta go.
The idea being that the...
It's time for some thinking juice.
It's time for some thinking juice. The temple, the holy temple, is the form. The sacrifices are the content.
One more time.
Sacrifices are content.
Sacrifices are content. Okay. And what's form?
The temple.
The temple is form.
Wait, now I'm confused.
What does that mean? You're just saying words now.
I know. I'm so sorry. I have to look at my notes for a second.
Okay. Here's something that I discovered today, because this has been an extremely philosophical day for all of us, okay? I was talking about whether or not God is nice.
Okay, yes.
Or not. That was something I was talking about today. Whether or not God is nice or not. Because somebody gave...
Did you put something here?
I did not. I spent the day with our show's counselor.
Guidance counselor?
Our guidance counselor. The show's guidance counselor, Dr. Delight. And he's like, hey, remember 6 months ago when you asked me for information about the 13 Midot? And I was like,
No.
He's like, well, I printed it off and it's here for you. And I'm like, I don't even know what to do with this. But I started reading it anyway. And it was like, you have to be like this because God is like that. And you have to be like this because God is like that. And one of the things was like, God is just so forgiving. And I was like, God totally bashed us one for what happened with Adam and Chava. Like, there's no forgiveness there.
Yeah, he's we like, here's pain.
Here's pain, and you're done. And then he's like, no, but there's Tikkun, and everyone has the opportunity for Tikkun. And I was like, what opportunity for Tikkun? And then I can't remember how we got to it, but, you know, natural conversation. And he's like, yeah, because... and then he goes, it's 7,000 years. Tikkun is 7,000 years, right? 6,000 of us trying to fix ourselves, and then 1,000 years of the Messianic Age. You know what I'm talking about? You've heard this thing before? Yep. And I was like, but that's Tikkun as a whole for our whole universe, our whole, you know, community, and for all the Jews. But there seems to be very little single forgiveness.
No, it's only the big stuff.
Like, it's like, what am I doing Tikkun for?
Right.
What am I doing? Because
you die,
for?
And God's gonna be like, "All right, let's look at the ledger. Well, let's go back to the day of your bar mitzvah."
No, but why is my wife have to be in pain in childbirth?
Because she ate from an apple.
No, she didn't. Somebody else did.
Yeah. So is God nice? I don't know.
And then we started talking about, and I was like, "What if you manage to do your tikkun? Can anybody?" Goes, "Yeah, when you do your tikkun, you die." I was like, whoa!
Oh, what a great thing.
Yeah, and then I was like, well, what about, so I'm saying, and what about old people? Everybody manages to complete tikkun when they're old?
You get what everybody gets, you get a lifetime.
Okay,
some people
thank
complete
you, Death.
Their tikkun
okay.
before that.
No, but all the old people, everyone manages to complete it by the time they're old?
I guess.
Like, is the 117-year-old guy just fucking up really badly?
He hasn't completed his tikkun.
What is he? He's
I don't know. I don't
drooling
like...
out of the side of his face. How is he going to manage to do
maybe,
that?
He's not maybe even... he's waiting for a great-grandkid to visit him finally.
People who are stuck in comas, how are they fixing their tikkun?
People who are stuck in traffic, how are they fixing theirs?
Because they're thinking about stuff. But if you're stuck in a coma and you're brain-dead vegetable, how are you in a tikkun?
Well,
and
maybe
then,
they're just waiting for you to...
And then, if you manage to complete your tikkun when you're a baby, because babies die, or little toddlers, but it's all Gilgul, and you're like, what is going on? And then I was thinking, is it tikkun versus pain in life?
Well, how
you know
about
what
this?
I mean?
How about this one, though? How many Jews were at Har Sinai? We believe it was somewhere in the neighborhood of like 3 million or something like that. Mm-hmm. By the way, thank you all so much for being with us here on the show. Why don't you click the like button while you're here?
Or share it.
I'm not going to ask you to share it, because that's a big...
That's just crazy talk.
That's a big commitment. But just click a little like while you're sitting here.
I think what we're going to do... Here we go. I have an idea, okay? Two exact the same tangent cups. One of them has a share button. The other one has Pepsi in it. Okay? Which one is which? They both have cool shit on them, so
okay.
I don't even know which one's yours. Yeah, share it.
What the hell? What the hell are we talking about?
Joe, you fucking liked it.
Yeah, Joe, you're the best.
You're the best. Share it. Okay.
Sylvia, thank you so much.
Sylvia.
Sylvia, sorry. Sorry.
Get back to it.
I blew it.
Okay.
What were we talking about?
Yeah, you're really bad at this tonight with the whole
audio. I'm telling you, dude, I've been up since 5:30 in the morning. I had a dream where one of my old classmates from the Hebrew Academy of Cleveland was a serial killer, and my wife and I captured him. You can tell from my dreams from last night, I've been watching way too much Luke Cage over the last week and a half.
Sure, sure.
And you were black. So form and content.
Form and content?
The temple is the form. The form of our worship. It is the symbol of everything that we have to worship God in. The content that we use to fill the form is the sacrifices that we bring there.
Okay. Right?
So Yoshiyahu says, hey, you want to bring sacrifices? That's cool, man. Just do it over here now.
Okay.
We're going to tear down all these things. By the way, he kills a ton of priests from other religions. Fine. And then we're going to bring all your stuff here.
Ain't nothing wrong with
what
that.
What the rabbis do is they take the form of the Hellenistic symposium, but they change the content. Why is there a difference? Because the difference is when we have the temple and when we don't have the temple. When we have the temple, that is the ultimate form of Judaism, of our faith. That is the symbol of it all. Okay? But when we don't have that, what we have to do is we have to protect the content. All we have now today
is... You just said they changed the content. You just said they changed the content.
The content of the Hellenistic, of a non-Jewish thing.
But we keep the content of the sacrifices, of what we used to do.
We That's keep the content of the Torah. We have the Torah content.
Oh, not the sacrificing on Pesach? That's now we're just talking about Big
about,
Adol?
About Big Adol.
I thought we were still Pesaching.
We are Pesaching, of course.
Okay.
But in general, we're talking about the Pesach Seder as in changing the content of something that is a not a Jewish tradition.
Yeah.
But instead, we're changing the content of that. But when we are, that feels much better.
Thank you.
When we have today, we don't have a temple, so all we have is the content. All we have is the Torah. We have to protect it at any cost. And this goes back to all the conversations we've been having about how rabbis are there to protect the tradition of Har Sinai, about how we're descended as Jews from our mothers because we can track that through the ages. It's the same thing. All we have is the content that we need to protect throughout the years and stuff like, and throughout the ages, and that we're using the Pesach Seder as another way to keep our content alive and keep that going throughout the generations. They just happened to find something that fit with the idea of it and said, hey, that's pretty good. We can make that work. I mean, the Haggadah itself is only like 2,000 years old, 800 years old. It's not as old as the idea of 2000 Passover.
2,000 or 800?
I know, there's a big discrepancy
there's
between the two.
There's a big discrepancy there. But we always knew what the main purpose of the Pesach Seder was. It was to remember.
To remember the story of what happened to us in Har Sinai.
Right, and now you're adding a whole new layer that the Pesach Seder is actually about remembering everything?
About remembering everything. About making sure that we hold on to the content of our faith, of our spirituality, of our religion, of our connection to God.
Why only Pesach? Why Dafka Pesach?
Because it's in 3 days, and that's what we're talking about.
No,
right now.
I mean, why does Pesach get that honor and responsibility?
I think that it goes back to the story of Yoshiyahu, who takes a generation of people who have been idol worshippers for many years. And he brings them back to the faith, and the first thing
the
that
first
he,
holiday
the
that
first thing
to
that they discuss in that is the idea of Pesach. Maybe that was the time of year that it happened in. It doesn't discuss that. But the thing that he says after he destroys all the idols and all the...
Time for Pesach.
It's time for Pesach.
So Dr. Delight was telling me that he told you something else that solved the conspiracy.
Okay.
And Johnny was just talking, for those of you listening right now, Johnny was just talking about maybe that this was the moment when all of mass revelation...
When we were lied to,
when we were lied to into joining Judaism. Except the temple was already there. So
right.
That's number one, so I don't
right.
know if that works at all. But he was saying Yoshiyahu was the top or the bottom. He was the north or the south?
He was the south.
He was the south, okay? He was the king of the south. of Yehuda.
He marries Yehuda, a woman from the north, yes.
Yehuda. So, but everyone up in Yehuda, they weren't idol worshipping.
How do you know that?
Based on what's going on in the Tanakh.
What does it say? It doesn't, I don't know.
David
that.
Said, Dr. Delight said, that all of the idol worship was going down south. But all the Jews up north weren't a part of that.
Makes no sense, because they're the ones who are closer to Assyria in general. So if you're talking about...
Except who's still around now?
What do you mean? Assyria and Egypt?
No, who's still around from those two lands? South or north?
The south. That's what's left.
Yehuda's is what's left.
Right. So that's...
We're the tribe of Yehuda. Yoshiyahu, I'm never going to get this dude's Yoshiyahu.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yoshiyahu was trying to bring something back that already existed up north.
Right, because, and he had married a northern woman.
So you're talking about, hey, he's trying to flip one on us. We don't even come from that.
But then my question now is,
a bunch of people.
For the historians who look at the historical aspect and say that the reason why there was so much idol worship was to try to be a subservient state to Assyria. It doesn't make sense that it would all be in the south.
Idol worship was awesome.
It doesn't make sense that they would be in the south because they're not close to Assyria. It's the north.
It's not about close. I'm sure you could have gone through Jordan to get there.
Or gone up the coast.
Okay, so maybe
what happens after that is, by the way,
there wasn't a giant fucking wall, Johnny.
No, I know. And so let me give you the end of Josiah's story.
Josiah?
Well, that's the English, Anglican, whatever. That's that version.
Josie Joe?
He basically says, he brings everybody back.
Yes.
The reason why it seems to say that he's able to do that is because he is, the reason why he's able to do that is because the Assyrian Empire at this point is much weaker now.
Right.
And they're not, we're not, we don't owe them anything anymore, and we have a little bit more autonomy.
Okay.
So we're able to sort of take our own, take our future into our own hands.
Okay.
Then, he says, then he's like, what happens is, as so often did, the pharaoh at the time, Necho II, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Decides, I'm going to go attack Assyria because that's what I do. So they march through. Josiah musters his troops, goes to fight Paro Necho, and is killed in the ensuing war.
So he was trying to protect the Assyrians?
He didn't want to let the Egyptians through to the next thing. But they did anyway. As usual, it's what so often happens in our history is that we are this state that exists as a buffer between empires. Some are on the rise, some are on the fall, and so on and so forth.
But that's not the case right now.
It's not the case right now, but we are...
I'll tell you something that's always bothered me. It's bothered me that we don't, like, add books to the Tanakh.
The closest we ever got to... Oh, and by the way, very quickly, a shout-out to my friend Naftali. Go Cavs, go Tribe. Both Cleveland teams are playing pretty good right now.
Dude, he wrote that like an hour ago.
Okay, but I was having an intense conversation about Torah. Hey, man, you're a frummy. Learn Torah. Sorry, I don't mean to be insulting.
No, he's a frummy. He's not going to learn Torah from us. Come on.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so again, I was wondering, how come we don't add books to the Torah anymore, you know? We go out of our way to say that there are all these, like, hidden miracles in the Book of Esther, in Megillat Esther, and it was an amazing story. We have this whole story of everything that's going on, but we've had just as crazy miracles since then.
The closest we got... I think.
Why isn't the War of Independence not there?
To adding a book. Oh, forget that. The closest we got was to adding the Book of the Hasmoneans. That's the closest. We almost added the Book of the Hasmonaim to the Torah. Michael, our friend Michael Nat points out that it's because there's no Nevuah anymore. You know my theory about Nevuah, right? Prophecy.
Where was the Nevuah in Esther?
That's a good question. It's not.
Boom!
But they'll say who the guy who
Boom!
Wrote it.
Boom!
The
Was it Mordechai, the uncle
cousin? You know my theory about Nevuah, right?
No.
My theory about Nevuah is, what if there still is
prophecy, but we're too jaded and we just think those people are sick in the head and need to be institutionalized.
Well, a lot of what they say is like, oh, this dude's starting to make sense, but then right after that they go, oh, praise the monkey, you know?
Well, but that's the thing. Like, somebody will say, a biblical critic will come up and he'll write an article and say, you know, the prophet Ezekiel showed classic signs of being schizophrenic. They'd be like, yeah, if God spoke to you, you'd be schizophrenic too. Like, how does it work out for King Saul after God takes his Shekhinah away from him, right? What's the whole thing? What's the thing that happens to Saul? Saul is...
Shaul.
Okay, Shaul HaMelech. How much do you know about Shaul HaMelech? Okay,
let's... Same as I know about Yeshayahu and...
Saul is...
And the hashtag Manias.
Saul is given the kingdom,
yeah.
And he is given the Shekhinah of God comes upon him. And he goes, the Shekhinah comes upon him, and everything's fine until he muffs up the whole Amalek thing, right? He doesn't kill Agag. And as a result of that, God takes the Shekhinah away from him. First of all, think about that. That's like taking a drug away from a junkie, okay? You took your Shekhinah out of the guy. That's going to put him in a pretty rotten mood, to say the least, okay?
To say the least.
Then all of a sudden, some kid, some teenager shows up at the...
I got your Shekhinah.
Not even that. Some kid shows up in the palace, and he's playing his little guitar for the king to just try to cheer up his spirits. And the king's going, oh, man.
It's called a ukulele.
I think it's a lyre, actually. An L-Y-R-E, I think that's what he plays.
It's a harp.
A small harp, yeah. And the king's thinking,
I need
oh,
a lyre.
Man.
A small lyre. I didn't do it. It wasn't me.
And he's going, man, that feels good. Like, oh, man, I've been in such a bad mood lately. Man, it feels good to that music feels good. Wait a minute. I know why that music feels good. That's Shekhinah music. That kid's got the Shekhinah. I'm going to throw a spear at his face. Which he does, which he totally does.
Because you know what he was playing on the lyre, right?
A harp. Thank you,
Daya.
Oh yeah,
harp.
Of course, he was totally playing the riff from Raining Blood by Slayer. Of course.
Doo-doo-doo. I bet you that exists somewhere on the internet.
Somebody playing a cover of Raining Blood.
Raining Blood.
No, it exists. Raining Blood on a kazoo or on a whatever.
Okay. Yeah. No. Go on. Go on.
That's it.
And he threw a face.
He threw a spear at Moses at David's face, and then you know how it ends. It ends with him committing suicide on the battlefield.
Like you do.
So just to wrap it all up, I've been thinking about the Seder all week as something much bigger than just the Seder. I've been thinking about it in the general way in which we try to protect our books. We try to protect what we have that ties us to our past, that ties us to our faith, and oftentimes we do have. We borrow bits and pieces from things, but a lot of it is we are the products of our surroundings, which leads us to Kitniot, which is the product of our surroundings as you and I and all our friends whose family came from Eastern Europe where the Kitniot happened. Like, it's part of the traditions that we pick up along the way are important, a burden. I don't exactly know, but I think that when it was created, the idea was to protect the content. Whether that's still relevant or not, it's not for me
they
to say.
They said originally, from what I understand, the Kitniot was like twofold. One, it looks too much like chametz. Fuck it, we don't want it because we might get confused. Number two is people are trying to kill us, and they may put it into our shit on purpose, and then we'll have chametz.
The explanation that I understood, and the one that I kind of like, as if I have to like an explanation of a thing that I don't like, is that in the Ashkenazic lands, in the Eastern Europe lands, the fields were able to be planted twice a year because of the way that the weather works. There were two planting and growing seasons.
So there was overlapping.
So there was overlapping, and there was a question that some of the things that would overlap with a field of wheat might have some remnants of what was left in that field.
What does that have to do with that shit I don't like to eat?
Quinoa.
Thank you.
Well, the whole thing that has to do with quinoa is that they didn't have it there.
Okay.
And but as soon as it kind of is a thing, the rabbis want to take it away from you.
Did you hear that they at some point were seriously considering getting rid of potatoes because they didn't have potatoes back then?
Fuck them. What a bunch of assholes. I'm sorry for calling rabbis assholes, but there are some rabbis who are assholes.
And then, like, people were just like, you take away potatoes, we got nothing.
Yeah.
We got nothing. That's all.
I told Melissa, I was like, Erev Pesach, when I get home from work, because I got to work a few hours Erev Pesach, can you make some, like, mashed potatoes? I'll just eat mashed potatoes before we go, because, like, it's going to be a rough day for food. Erev Pesach is the worst food day of the year.
Don't you fast?
I'm supposed to. Thanks for bringing that up, Crystal Pepsi Card Boy.
So, I want to give a shout out to a very funny Facebook, like, Pesach. A lot of the Facebook statuses are very, like, Pesach sucks, right? Which I agree with wholeheartedly.
What do you mean? You get to eat meat and potatoes.
No, so somebody was like, who's excited? I just finished my menu for Pesach. On the first day, we're going to have chicken and potatoes. Chicken and potatoes. Then we're going to have chicken and potatoes. Then we're going to have chicken with potatoes. Then some potato salad. And then tuna. And then and who's excited for the menu? And I just thought that was really funny.
Why can't you make a little meat? Come on, guys. Make a little beef. Where's the beef?
Where's the beef?
All right.
I just want to say, I'm not high-fiving you yet.
No.
Put the hand down. Okay. All right, Johnny. You've just discovered that the importance of the Pesach Seder is to force us to protect the content. It's there to help us protect the content.
Okay, fine.
It is so much more important.
I sense you're gonna point out how I'm a hypocrite right now.
I'm on my way there.
Okay.
And okay, now that you know this, what are you gonna do about it?
I'm gonna have a very nice experience. I have always enjoyed the Pesach Seder. My problem with the Seder isn't the talking. It's not the talking about history. It's not the reminiscing and all that. It's the singing. I don't like all the singing.
The singing's all at the end.
There's middle singing, too. But we have there's a rule. The family has a rule. Max was telling me about it. Everybody has a maximum of 10 minutes which they can make Divrei Torah. You can do 10 1-minute Divrei Torah, 2 5-minute, whatever it is. You got a limit.
Throughout the whole Seder, you only have 10 Seder, minutes? Somebody's there with a stopwatch?
I don't know, but it's just a way to keep everybody a little bit honest. So I'm going to give them this Divrei Torah. It won't take 10 minutes, but whatever. And my whole thing that is interesting to me is to open up a dialogue. I'm not there to lecture people. I want to know. Because, by the way, my sister-in-law, Avia, and my brother-in-law, Shmuley, always have interesting thoughts, and I can't wait to hear what they have to say. So,
because here's the thing, though. You kind of have to be careful during the Pesach Seder. Yes, it's nice to gab. Yes, it's nice to talk. But when do you get into the conversation? Do you get into the conversation during the meal? During the readings? Because the longer that you push that off, the longer the conversation goes, and is conversation counted as your 10 minutes? If every one of you go,
I got nothing else.
Pepsi or Coke, and everyone goes, blah, they all start Pepsi or Coking, but you don't say another word, is that your 10 minutes?
My Divrei Torah is going to take place at the story of the Bnei Brak rabbis, because that is the type of meal that they're talking about in the context of the symposium, is what they're doing. They go all night, that whole story. So that's when I'm going to step in with my thing. That's all I got. So I'm happy to entertain other ideas with them or talk about other things. But the truth is
can
is
we
that,
all agree that the second half of the Seder is a bit...
Oh, because you've had... First of all, you've had at least 3 cups of wine to that point. You've had your 3rd cup after benching.
Also, all my kids are going to be asleep by that point.
Right, and you've got...
And we have no guests.
And you've got no guests. And you've got... And you've done the Maggid stuff. You've had a huge meal... And you are ready to sort of pass out.
And then they go, here's 20 more pages.
That's, by the way, where my family's Seder is going to drag. Because they're going to sing everything. And it's going to be 2 hours of them sitting around the table singing. And I'm going to be over to the side with my sister goofing off. You have to be very careful. You have to be very careful, but I think we can pull it off.
Well, now it's out there.
Yeah, but my wife doesn't listen to the show, so what the hell...
And she's into that? She's into the singing with
the
family?
She's into the Saltzman family traditions. And I like that. I like that the family has a bunch of goofy shit that they do, and I want to see their goofy shit. I just don't want it to take so long. All right. On that note,
let's call it a wrap for Bava Batra Yudbet Yochanan Miom Shichrav Beit Hamikdash Nitla Nevua Min Hanavim VeNitna LeShotim VeLeTinokot.
So basically, what Michael Natt has shared with us is something.
Sometimes it's hard to catch up with what everybody's saying.
Something from Bava Batra, which Rabbi Yochanan says that Nevua went away with the Beit Hamikdash.
Yes. So let's wrap this up the way that we would have done
it.
Did you
like all those Diana posts?
Let's do that right now with everyone together. We're going to do our own little section, our own Diana song with you guys tonight. We're going to start, if Michael and Johnny had met, but never did their own music podcast.
Diana.
Okay. Next one up. If Michael and Johnny had done their own podcast shows, but had never created Tangent Podcast.
Diana
would have been a really cool run, but we did create Tangent Podcast.
Wait,
and if they had created Tangent Podcast but had no audience, Diana, because that's what we do when they're not around anyway.
Right,
we've mentioned it before. If Tangent Podcast had listeners but no shares, that's pretty much what we have now. So Diana, that'd be cool too, but. This would be a very nice opportunity to thank everyone. To thank everyone for being a part of the Tangent family, for joining us every single week when we're around to do it and when you're around. And you can always go and hear the episodes on rockforgies.com. Maybe not the first half of this week's show, but we didn't play any music. So if you missed the first half of the show because one of the two of us didn't hit the start button on Mixlr, then it's everything you missed is on Facebook Live. So definitely go check that out on our Facebook page. Facebook's not taking it down this week. We really appreciate everything, and we like being a part of the dialogue. And
I would like to say,
yeah,
you didn't finish, but we did have our own music podcast for a little while. We created Tangent off and on for a few seasons. We gained an audience that comes and goes, and we get shares sometimes. But what I really want to say is, especially the last month and a half has been, for me, an incredible experience to sort of go through what we've been going through and study the things we've been studying and learn the things we've been learning and coming to all these interesting conclusions and sharing it with you guys. First of all, shout out to Dr. Delight, without whom none of this would be possible.
Oh, and I messed up. Last week when we spoke about Amalek, I forgot to thank the rabbi who I went to for help, which was Rav Tzvi Ron.
Yeah.
Shout out to him. Yeah, thank you very much.
So it's amazing that we are, the journey that we've been on and that you guys are with us throughout it all, we really appreciate it. And thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah.
So we're going to stop the video, but we'll play a couple of songs.
Yeah, we need some music.
I want to play the random song.
Okay, so we had some really good challenges this week from the 100-Day Song Challenge. You guys aren't going to be able to listen to it, but everybody on Mixlr.com, we had a song with a very fast beat, which we're like, screw it, let's do Pesach songs, which we're not going to do tonight. We had a song about an object, which we're going to do next week. I still want to do the song
about
the
object. I do too.
I really want to do the song about the object. But the second one was just a random song, and it's holiday time, and why not? Let's do some random songs right now. So we're going to say goodbye to everybody on Facebook Live right now. Thank you very much for joining us. Peace out. We love you very much. You're gone now. And that's my cup. And for those of you on Mixlr.com, thank you very much for joining us. Remember to like, share the show, etc. Pass it around. Finishing off this week for a random song for me is a song by the rapper known as Jidenna. I discovered him, and you probably did too if you've been watching Luke Cage. He was one of the guest musical artists on the show. The song is called Long Live the Chief. It's really cool. It's during a montage where Luke is trying to see how strong he actually is a little bit, but he's not. He's actually digging for clues.
Yeah,
he's digging for clues. And Johnny Chong
is some artist I found named Jengi Beats, and the song's called True. So peace out. We'll see you. I don't know if we'll see you next week. We'll let you know, but for sure in 2 weeks.
All right, peace out, guys.
Niggas fighting over rings. Niggas won't be the game, but long live the chief. For a little old thing, little boys bang bang. Long live the chief. Niggas fighting over rain, niggas won't be the game, but long live the chief. Yeah, watch pretty mama while I slay my cane. Long little chief. Cockroaches in the ratchet. Hand-me-downs with the patches. Mama put a little money in the mattress. Taught me how to make a silver spoon out of plastic. You can either sink, swim, or be the captain. Get the last word, I'ma get the last laughing. Now they say your dinner while you're dressing so classy. I don't want my best dressed day in a casket. You can either leave, follow, or get out the way. Make a fucking move, it will make my fucking day. Got a 100-year plan, you just think about the day. Always been about time, more than been about pay. Y'all up with me, Usain couldn't run with me. Chief come to find you, you don't come for me. At best, you could run a little company. Nigga, at worst, I could run the whole country. That's right, pimp game like a brothel. That's why I don't judge a nigga's hustle. I Airbnb the crib like a hostel. Summer rate cheaper, could the streets get hostile? Shot the boy, this far from a hobby boy. So no, I won't record for your homie boy. I turn the party out like a naughty toy. Then I go and hide in plain sight like a lobby boy. Yes sir, that your dinner on the banner. Riding for my niggas, getting locked up in a slammer. Elder saying everything's a nail to a hammer. And niggas can't spell, but we know I Instagrammer. Well done, better than well said. I read niggas well, a nigga well read. Really, I ain't met nobody smarter. That's why I got admitted, but I still rejected Harvard. I'm the Fresh Prince in a school where they couldn't read. Mama put me in a school with the Kennedys. When I met Bill Clinton, I was 17. But dead presidents is all my niggas need. Dining with the governor's daughter, and the father say I remind him of Obama. I'm the chief diplomat every day, and I'm black and white, Janelle Monae. They won't be the king, but long live the chief. For a little old thing, little boys bang bang. Long live the chief. Niggas fighting over ranks, niggas won't be the king, but long live the chief. Now watch pretty mama while I slam my cane. Long live the chief.
Yeah. It's true.